A veteran of the 1964 free speech movement, he lives a low-impact, solar-assisted lifestyle in Berkeley, California. Gar is also the author of Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth. Gar.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for staying in here, giving a new advanced meaning to the phrase staying power. I'm really honored to be the final speaker. Speaker 29, we've had quite a day here today, and there will be more tomorrow. Bruce's speech was so great, it should have been the concluding anthem of this event, at least for today. But I'm here to talk about robots, and not just about the militarization issue, but I want to think deeper about why robots, and then beyond that, whither. As I was thinking about it, it occurred to me that really facsimiles of the human form have been with us for a long time, and I think to a great degree they stem from the same source, the profound realization among humans that our bodies are ephemeral, that we wither and die. But thanks to the human mind and the opposable thumb, we stumbled upon the ability to render facsimiles of human life and natural life. But throughout the years, I discovered there have been a small coterie of individuals who have not been content to merely paint or sculpt facsimiles of nature. Some individuals felt a need to go beyond this and to actually animate their facsimiles. In the course of recorded history, you find mentions of robots back before BC, back in BC, 300 years before BC, back in the days of the Greeks. The Greek god Hephaestus was credited with creating mechanical handmaidens, maybe the first subservient female robot. He also came up with the alternative, a towering golden warrior named Talos, who was deployed to protect the island of Crete. From there, we find other evidence of would-be roboticists from the ancient world. We had, in 1206, we had a Muslim mathematician named Al-Jaziri. He built what may have been the world's first programmable robots. He designed a quartet of mechanical musicians that performed on a boat that would float nearby during royal drinking parties. I wish we had a videotape of that to show. And then along comes Leonardo da Vinci, who arguably built the world's first remote-controlled driverless automobile, and he left behind plans to build a mechanical knight that would actually sit up and move its jaw and wave its arms, presumably in a threatening manner. Following that, we had a Swiss watchmaker who really built some astonishing childlike automatons, and these are still around and you can see them on YouTube. He built three child robots. One of them had more than 6,000 moving parts, remember, in the body of a child. One of them could play a piano, one of them could draw a horse or a dog, and the third was capable of writing letters. These early robots were all powered by water and by weights and by hand-wound springs. But today, of course, our robots are powered by coal, oil, and electricity. The first electric robot that we know of was built in 1928 by a British inventor who powered his beast with a 12-volt motor. Western Electric was right behind in 1939 with a device called Electro. This was a towering aluminum-skinned giant that had the ability to move, and he could speak, and he could also smoke cigarettes. Those were the days. In 1996, here comes the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. They were the first to build a robo-tuna, yep, a robot tuna fish. And Honda quickly comes on the scene with their invention, the first humanoid robot. It could carry on conversations. This is something that's one of the first things you want your boss to do. You want to be able to push the message. And in 2000, that's when we first saw the ever-charming, delightful Japanese robot, Asimo. I'm sure you've all seen Asimo, about this tall, irresistibly cute. Asimo it was kind of a childlike bot, and it can walk, it can dance. You may have seen it kicking a soccer ball to the President of the United States. It does that too. Then in 2004, we had a unique moment. Cornell University crossed a red line when it created the first robot that was capable of self-replication. That's quite a step. Today in Japan, there are entire factories that are filled with robots building other robots. And now, as natural life collapses under the sixth extinction, what do we have some of our brightest minds doing? We have robot researchers, and they're usually men between the ages of 20 and 40, powered by Pentagon dollars, our tax money. These guys are busy creating what you might call Neo-Edens of robotic wildlife. They have created, and you can find these on YouTube to confirm it, they've created robot snakes, fish, dolphins, sharks, horses, hummingbirds, houseflies, and, God bless them, mosquitoes. And many of these little toys are designed to be weaponized by our military. Now, I'm thinking it's probably no accident that it's men who seem to have been obsessed with this artificial life thing. And I'm speculating the preoccupation may stem from something that maybe somebody else besides myself has called womb envy. The recognition that in the natural world, it's women who bring forth life. What a bummer if you're a man. The male obsession with creating life in the lab rather than the womb has been called the God complex. And yes, thanks to the grand march of masculine science, human embryos have now been successfully grown in artificial wombs. Now, a little bit about what lies ahead in the world of bioscience. There are breakthroughs coming in the next few years. It will make cloning and xenotransplantation seem absolutely benign. At least when scientists in the old days planted a spider gene in a goat or inserted a pig cell into a human brain, they were at least dealing with natural ingredients. Give them some credit for that. Well, here is what they're working on now. A few examples of some what you might call biobot experiments. Let's begin with University of Reading professor Kevin Warwick. Did I almost say Warlock? I'm sorry. He has something called Project Cyborg, and he's had microchips implanted in his body so that computers can remotely monitor what he does. And this is really groovy, as he approaches doors, the doors will automatically open for him. I think that's the God complex at work again. And here we have the Pentagon working on brain implants that would empower soldiers to remotely control military robots. We've got researchers building adapting living cockroaches by equipping them with microelectric backpacks that allow them to scamper around, but you can remotely steer them. Isn't that cool? You can remotely steer a cockroach. They're equipped with TV images that can be sent back to distant spy labs. The U.S. has also got some scientists who have built a robotic fish guided by the brain cell of an eel, and they've implanted biofuel cells in snails that allow them to turn their natural glucose into electricity. Now, I'm not sure what the thinking here is, but it could be that, you know, if your cell phone is about to die, you just plug in a snail. But this is what defense money goes for. Off in Britain, We've got scientists who built robots that use a microbial fuel cell to power themselves when they're released into the wild. And how do they power themselves? By using these microbial fuel cells to feed on the bodies of living creatures. Robots that eat released in the wild. Now, Fox News recently reported that the Pentagon's energetically autonomous tactical robot, mark the acronym, it spells EATER, it powers itself by gobbling up whatever organic matter it can find, grass, wood, even dead bodies. Now, the Pentagon's Maryland-based contractor had to rush out with a press release saying that really our EATER machine is a strict vegetarian, not to worry. But not before the National Post wryly noted, headline, artificially intelligent, self-fueling killer machines? What could go wrong? A little history about warbots. It was Nazi Germany that fielded the first robot in World War II. It was called a Goliath. It was a crawling, remote-controlled bomb tethered to an electric leash. It was 4 foot square. It was kind of an IED on treads. And you could drive it right up and into an enemy bunker and then blow it up. In 2007, DARPA, our defense research agency, introduced a Goliath of their own in Iraq. The Special Weapons Observation Remote Direct Action System, aka SWORDS, was a ground-based radio-controlled killer droid with video eyeballs and an M249 light machine gun on its top. During its first deployment in Iraq, however, the SWORDS droids reportedly turned their weapons on U.S. forces, and the experiment was abruptly canceled. The Pentagon continues to deny this happened. The first Predator drones were launched during the Balkan War, and by the early 2000s, they were equipped with supersonic Hellfire missiles. While a Predator drone is about the size of a school bus, some of these are pretty large beasts. The Pentagon's current arsenal also includes a lot of small-scale warbots. Some are designed to look like and fly like birds, and we saw one in that video clip. The Sandia National Lab has built a remote-controlled flybot. It weighs 1 ounce, and it's slightly smaller than a dime. It's equipped with a TV scanner, a microphone, and a chemical microsensor. The microbot ostensibly exists to protect, we are told, U.S. military and economic interests. Go bot. Now, some of these spy bots resemble flying dominoes. And these can be released in swarms to infiltrate entire neighborhoods. They can follow targets down the street as they walk unobserved, and they can slip through doors and windows, and some of them can even quietly sneak up behind someone, behind a victim's head, before triggering a lethal explosion. These are weaponized flying dominoes. Now, because some of these drones rely on tires, treads, or tracks, ground-based drones are limited relative to the terrain. They need flat ground to walk on. But a machine with robotic feet can roam practically anywhere. And that's why in 2004, DARPA and Stanford University created a gecko-like sticky bot that was able to climb up vertical walls and perch on ceilings where it could spy on the activities below. Then came Big Dog, which we also saw clambering over the terrain in that video. A four-legged, gas-powered metallic beast is built by Boston Dynamics. This one can whip up mountainsides and scramble across frozen lakes, carrying 400 pounds of weapons and or supplies, which is many times more than a human soldier could carry. This is a real, what the military calls, force multiplier. At UC Berkeley, not to be outdone by our rival Stanford, our search team came up with something called the Human Universal Load Carrier. Watch out for the acronym again, that spells HULK. It's a mechanical exoskeleton that can be strapped to a human body to endow the wearer with superhuman strength. So we've already gotten to the point where we have robot-like humans. Now the next step, obviously, is human-like robots. And these creatures are being designed to think the same way that human beings do, not just to move, not just to respond like a human would do in a physical environment. But they're capable of thinking, they're capable of outthinking us. They can detect emotions and even infer hidden motives. In other words, these robots can tell when you're lying to them. And this can be useful. In South Korea today, Samsung robots have replaced human guards along the border with North Korea. When these robots detect the approach of a human, they demand a password. And if they don't get the correct answer, they're programmed to fire automatically. So never lie to a robot on the South North Korea border. DARPA's ultimate professed goal is to take man out of unmanned warfare, their phrase. This means building war bots that are that have the capacity to make their own decisions about who to kill. And this takes us beyond mere artificial life and into the boundary of artificial intelligence. And this, we have been warned, promises to bring us to an alpha barrier. When you cross that barrier, that means you've crossed a point at which a single new discovery can radically transform all future technological innovations. A U.S. Joint Forces Command study predicts deployment of fully autonomous battlefield robots by the year 2025. And sure, like humans, these super strong and super smart warbots will occasionally make mistakes and kill innocent civilians, but unlike humans, they won't experience guilt or suffer from PTSD. On November 21, 2012, the Pentagon issued a 15-page directive calling for an autonomous weapons system that, once activated, can select and engage targets without human supervision. But the Pentagon had already taken steps in 2005 to build a $130 billion robot army, the Future Combat Systems Program. The largest military contract on record at that time was designed to replace human robots with mechanical terminators at one-tenth the cost. Eliminating humans from the combat workforce would save billions in combat pay and veterans benefits. The Navy, meanwhile, has already developed prototype missiles and ships that can seek out and engage the enemy without human oversight. But there is resistance. In 2009, the International Committee for Robot Arms Control announced a coalition campaign to stop killer robots, and in May 2013, a UN report called for a temporary ban to prevent robot arms races that, as they noted, quote, threatened, their observation was, tireless war machines ready for deployment at the push of a button pose the danger of permanent armed conflict. Meanwhile, Gordon Johnson of the U.S. Joint Forces Research Center has no qualms about unleashing killer robots on the world. He recently told the New York Times, "The lawyers tell me there are no prohibitions against robots making life or death decisions." Problem solved. Finally, something else to worry about, the singularity. This is the point at which human beings merge with technology. Our minds, as some would have it, meld with our machines. Our machines transcend our natural bodies and we become immortal, or some might say we will become irrelevant. The nonprofit Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence believes that the technological creation of computer-assisted superhuman intelligence will produce an immediate worldwide and material improvement to the human condition, but others are not so sure. In his book, The Singularity is Near, Ray Kurzweil predicts that the merging of biological and artificial intelligence will lead to computers that are conscious, feeling beings, deserving of the same rights, privileges, and consideration people give to each other. There are profound dangers, however, he mentioned, but I don't think you can stop it. Asked how bad a post-human world might be, Victor Vingi, the originator of the singularity concept, concluded, quote, "How bad could things be? Well, pretty bad. The physical extinction of the human race is one possibility." When the singularity occurs, Vingi says, it could happen in the blink of an eye, an exponential runaway beyond any hope of control. It will probably occur faster than any technical revolution seen so far. Even if all the governments of the world were to understand the threat and be in deadly fear of it, progress toward the goal would continue. Tesla founder Elon Musk recently observed, "I don't think anyone realizes how fast artificial intelligence is advancing. The collective fear is that superintelligent machines could become so smart that they might conclude, quite logically, that human beings are a threat to planetary survival and respond responsibly by destroying all human life." How is that for an irony? The artistic impulse to build robots to escape the biological noose of human mortality could bring us to the point where we've created a technological guillotine that might lead to human extinction. In his book, Microshift, Irvin Laszlo argues that the industrial civilization is destined to disappear without a profound and rapid macro shift from economic globalization to a new and sustained civilization. Instead of conquest, colonization, and consumption, future survival will require connection, communication, and consciousness. Meanwhile, we face a hard truth. Our technology has created problems that can seemingly only be solved by more technology. Case in point, last point, the Fukushima meltdowns. It's impossible for any living thing to enter the broken reactors and attempt to contain the damage, so the order has gone out, send in the robots. With our divided brains physiologically locked in an endless left-right contest between logic and emotion, reason and intuition, between technophilia and naturophilia, we would do well to recall the words of Albert Einstein, who said, "The intuitive mind is the sacred gift, and the rational mind is the faithful servant." And let us heed the counsel of psychiatrist Ian McGilchrist, who said, "We have created a society that honors the servant, but has forgotten the gift." Thank you.